When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's time for the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast, answering your questions from the General's Quarters every week, right here on VolQuest.
Hey, good Thursday morning, everybody. Welcome to the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast. I'm Eric Kane, alongside Austin Price, Brent Hubbs, and Grant Ramey. A big thanks, as always, to our friends, the presenting sponsor of this VolQuest Podcast, that is Exterior Home Solutions. If you need roofing, siding, windows, a garage, contact Exterior Home Solutions today. They've been local, they've been trusted since 1999. That phone number is 865-524-5888 or online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. We got a lot of questions to get into, so we'll jump right into it. We'll go to Ernest P. Volrell. What's the two deep at the five defensive back spots, and who is the dime back if that situation were to arise? Brent, let's go two deep at the five DB spots first, to the best of our knowledge right now.
No, I mean, if they were playing today, I think their starters would be McCoy and Gibson at the corners, Jordan Thomas at the nickel or the star, with Andre Turrentine, and I think Jacoby Thomas at the other safety spot. That was where I would be with my first five. My second five, Will Brooks would be one of the safeties. I guess John Slaughter's the other safety AP. Yep. Blue Carter is the nickel.
Yep.
Jordan Matthews is corner. Christian. No, it would be the kid from
McMurray.
Temple. Yeah. And then Christian Conyer or Jordan Matthews?
I would go Conyer.
Okay.
But I think, honestly, that's kind of a flip the coin.
I got you.
So if you're going to go to dime, which is six defensive backs, where depending on the team, you take out a defensive lineman or a linebacker, whatever.
Have they played a possession of dime in Tim Banks' tenure?
I don't think so, to be completely honest.
I don't want to say they did that first or second year.
If they did, I probably would put Boo Carter in there somewhere just to be my sixth guy.
No.
If he's not starting by that point. But in all honesty, it'd probably be the guy from Temple, I guess.
I would say
learn his name before the season starts.
Jalen McMurray. All right. Let's go to Football Fanatic 09. What happened with Elijah Herring, and does this impact Caleb? Uncle Austin used to talk about how big of a deal it was to have Caleb's big brother around him and how Caleb really needed Elijah. What's he do now with Elijah gone? Austin, I would say at least part of that is, hey, Caleb's been here for a year. He's grown up. He's good, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think that was big when they were in high school. Here it's a little different. I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, they are still attached to the hip in a lot of ways, but – I think Caleb would manage just fine if Elijah ends up in the portal. Right as of this taping, he's not in the portal. And we'll see what happens there. Right, he's announced his intentions to go in, and I guess he would probably have to go in sometime today because they have so long. But there's still a chance he could come back. So we'll kind of see where it goes. Either way, I don't think it affects Tennessee or in with Caleb this year. You know, after that. You know, I think that's all you can do is kind of take it one year at a time because, you know, if you're trying to project, you know, 2 years from now, I mean, like you could be way better in 2 years or way worse in 2 years on your roster just based off, you know, kind of decisions that everybody makes individually. So I think you just have to take it one year at a time, and I don't think Caleb is affected for this fall. And Elijah just won a playing time, period. It's kind of like a Tobey.
Let's go next to Trouble. Why are you guys so cautious with the Nico hype? We're talking about a generational talent here, and it seems that he has all the intangible twos. Most NFL scouts would probably take him on their roster over Hendon Hooker right now, in my opinion. After a year and a half in the program, what is it that makes you guys so conservative with your outlook next season with Nico? Grant, why don't you step up to the plate and take this one?
Because we carried so much water for Joe Milton last season, according to according to that one. I can't even remember who that was.
It wasn't so Trouble, but yeah.
We're just regressing to the mean here. We gotta even. I didn't realize we had such takes on Nico. I thought he was a pretty good football player.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I got to see somebody start more than one game before I label them generational. Okay, I've not seen many generational guys come through in 30 years. That's not to say he can't play. I don't think their defense was the steel curtain of the Steelers in the 70s, or the purple
same
people.
Colors, though. Same Vikings. Colors, though.
Same colors. They weren't the purple people leaders of the Vikings. They're not the Ravens and Ray Lewis.
86 Bears.
He played well, and I think he has a ton of talent and has a chance to be a really, really good player. That's not knocking him in any way. I think we've talked about it, AP, how different this offense can be this year compared to last year with the ability to use the entire field, his legs, his pocket presence. I mean, I don't know that we've said a negative word about him. I just haven't put a gold jacket on him yet.
Yeah, I mean, there's a difference between downplaying him and then just kind of waiting on it to happen, right? I don't think anybody said, well, we'll see. Not sure. Like, all the chatter is Nico is going to be exactly who they thought he was going to be. But there's been enough guys over the years, Brian Darden, O.J. Owens, Harrison Bailey. Now, I mean, Harrison wasn't in the same ilk as Nico, but at the same time, he had a fifth star for a lot of the fans. There was this, ooh, you're going to get Harrison Bailey in the game. You got to kind of just let it play out. Like, Nico's got a ton of ability. His ability to read, process, make quick decisions takes me back to 22. He's got better athletes around him than Joe ever had a year ago.
I agree with
so that said, they're going to win them all, 12-0.
Well, okay, so in that answer, AP just compared Nico to Harrison Bailey and just declared a national championship.
And 30 so you get seconds. both sides of the coin. No, Eric just, Kane.
There'll be 12 threads on the GQ about that one.
You know what I'm saying, though? Like, I mean,
I
like,
know exactly what you're saying.
It's April. Yeah, I mean, like, let's get to end of September and let him play 4 games.
Absolutely. 100%.
Listen, if he goes on the road, they beat – Oklahoma, if they win the neutral site game, which is a sneaky game. I don't mean against NC State. And they're sitting there undefeated going into that first bye week. You're feeling pretty good because you're playing at Arkansas, which, who knows where they are. You play home against Florida. Who knows where they are as a program. And then it all kind of starts to snowball. So, in a good way.
I don't know. Rule of thumb, I guess. The last time that college football as a whole – self-appointed a Heisman Trophy winner before taking snap one of the season, that quarterback transfer from Oklahoma to South Carolina, it didn't end too well that year, remember? So, like, let's just let him play a couple of games, in my opinion. But I like Eric, you guys.
Eric, it's the 85 Bears. 86 didn't go so good.
I know. I've looked it up. Obviously, 85 was the best year, but 86 was also a good year, Grant. So, I wasn't.
Yeah, it wasn't that great. It wasn't 85. There's only one Bears defense, 85
Bears. I think Nico is going to be awesome, and so I'm just excited to watch him play. But let's see him play a few games, in my opinion. Davey Vol says that the staff doesn't elect to take a running back in the portal. Do you think the reasoning will be because they believe they feel good about what they have and they don't want to upset Samson and Seldon? Brent, I feel like there's a number of factors there. I mean, that could be a factor, but there's the asking price factor. And at the end of the day, this can be a third-string running back most likely.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's a blanket answer to that question. I think part of it is, listen, if you don't feel like you can get through the first part of the season, then you got to go take a running back. I mean, that's first and foremost, because you got to do what's best for the football team, not for the position room. If you feel like you have to have a running back, then you go get a running back and you deal with feelings in it. If you feel like you can get through the first part of the season, then you don't go upset that apple cart. I mean, I think it just starts and stems with, do you think you're good in the month of September with what you have on your roster, knowing that Peyton Lewis is going to be cut loose AP the first week of fall camp, ready to go. How much can he get going in 3.5 weeks to learn? And then Seldon be back sometime probably mid-September. So can you get through the first 2 weeks, 3 weeks? Do you feel okay with that? Or do you feel like you've got to go get somebody? That's the first and foremost decision that you have to make. Now, you're not going to spend a bunch of money to go get a guy who may end up being your fourth team tailback in the middle of October. Okay. You know, and then if you go get a guy who expects to be running back one, then what does that do with your current guys? Yep. You know, I mean, there's just a lot of variables in there. It's just not a blanket black and white situation.
Come on, Hubs, man. You got to spend money, man. You can't be cheap. It's just monopoly money. Let's just spend it. $500,000, $600,000. Let's go get a guy. It doesn't matter about Dylan Sampson's feelings. It doesn't matter about the running back room. I mean, that you hit the nail on the head. That's exactly right. That you have, there's a billion variables that you have to look at. And that's not just at running back. That's at every position. And it's all the time. And so, I mean, I guess for my liking, you know, if you're not going to put a ton of money in NIL up for a kid, you're best off just to roll with what you got, because taking a body to take a body just doesn't make any sense, because it hurts your ability to recruit. But I do get the people that are like, man, you know what I mean? What if Dylan Sampson tweaks his ankle the third week of fall camp?
I get that too. I
mean, that's a legitimate concern. I mean,
yeah. Bubble wrap.
I mean, yeah. I mean,
watch.
I mean, yeah. I fully get it. I understand it's risky. So is rolling into the season with, you know, no really experienced quarterbacks behind Nico. But it is what it is. I mean, like, nobody with any kind of eligibility that wants to play is rolling in here going, yeah, I'll be the backup to Nico, and just be ready just in case. Like, I mean, it's just not happening.
And here's the thing too, like, in fall camp, you know, we can say bubble wrap all we want, and I mean, I'm with you, but like, in order for you to be pretty, like, you got to take contact. You got to work a little bit, right? So I mean, it's not like you can just go and, yeah, you got to get hit. You know, we saw Wright had the fumbling issues to begin the 22 season, right? Yeah, and it's because he didn't get hit in fall camp. So like, you still got to get work in fall camp, and it's your one twisted ankle away from being in a real bad situation. So I mean, I totally get that as well.
If you're Darrell Sims and Josh Heupel and Joey Halsley, you have to hope that Peyton Lewis is who they hope he is, right? Like, you know, they don't know yet, but he's doing everything perfect off the field. But once he gets on the field, he's got to be perfect as well. And they need Cam Seldon to be a quicker healer than this. You know, some kids come back from things faster. So, like, let's see where he's at. Right? And it's too soon to know. You know, we get to mid-June, they're like, okay, he's ahead of pace. He was supposed to be ready third week of September. Now, he looks like he'll be back the first of September.
Well,
those are things we just don't know.
Yeah, and I think the other thing too, Grant, is you have to be smart in play calling and schematics the first part of the season, not to isolate, you know, a Peyton Lewis and pass protection against something. If that means you're leaving a tight end and you're doing some things differently, you kind of got to help them, right? You don't want to put a Peyton Lewis in a situation like Dylan Sampson was in as a freshman at LSU. You know, where Hendon Hooker got lit up. So there's a ton of things that you have to deal with, and that's why Josh Heupel, I'm going to continue to say it, makes $200,000 a week to make that decision.
That's right.
You know, you're going to roll with it or you're not going to roll with it. That's why he gets paid the big bucks, Grant Ramey. That's why he gets Grant Ramey money.
Yeah, right. You better be smart with it. Just like, I mean, Nico, like what Austin's talking about with not much experience behind Nico. I mean, how many times did he run in the Citrus Bowl? 15, 16? It was a pretty big number, right? I mean, you're not going to be able to, or you shouldn't be running him that many times in September because of what you have behind him or what you don't have behind him. Just like you're talking about, not isolating a freshman in September in pass protection stuff. You better be smart about it both ways in terms of injury scheme, all that stuff, because the depth is what it is, and you're trying to figure it out as you go.
Grant, let's say with you, we'll go to Rocky Top Mojo or Rock Top Mojo. Would each of you please give a bold prediction for UT football next year?
Just one bold prediction?
Yeah, or two or three. You got
a
list.
I don't know what qualifies as a bold prediction. Winning at Oklahoma in September and beating Oklahoma on the road in Oklahoma's first game in SEC. Play.
Like, my bold prediction when I read this would be like, okay, Tennessee's offense is going to rebound and be a top five offense. But is that a bold prediction, or should that be the expectation under Josh Heupel? That's kind of where I'm at.
Right. I think that would be my first bold thought, would be that they go to Oklahoma and win. I don't know. Nico's a good football player. That sounds like a bold prediction based on the question from earlier. Pretty good, really good. I don't know. Not bad. I think going to Oklahoma and winning would be a really, really good start. It would make a statement for this team. I think that would be pretty bold. I don't know.
Anybody else, Brent?
Defense will record 100 tackles for loss.
I like that. AP?
Boo Carter will return a punt for a touchdown.
There you go.
And I will go Dante Thornton will lead the team in I will go Dante Thornton will have over 700 yards receiving. That's pretty bold considering what he did last year.
Feels like 23.
I'll also throw out that they're going to honor the basketball team at some point on the field and Tobey Awaka will be out.
There we go. All right, let's go to the WHVO. WHVOL says, who will wear the helmet with the speakers on defense this season? Brent, you'd probably know better than anybody. Is it going to be a linebacker in Keenan Peely? Is it going to be a safety in Jacoby Thomas? How does that work in terms of, say, Peely gets banged up? Is there another? Do they just take the device out and put it in somebody else's helmet? To your knowledge, how does all that work?
Yeah, they'll have a couple. I mean, they can have a couple of devices over there. Obviously, you can't have two active at one point, but you can pop one out, put another one in, just like a quarterback. If something were to go wrong there, you can do that. I would imagine it's going to be a linebacker. I think it makes the most sense for Keenan Peely to be the guy because he can communicate to the guys up front. He can communicate to the guys in the back end. And he can set a lot of alignments and shifts and those type of things. So I think it'll be Keenan Peely.
Not Jalen McCullough?
Jalen's out of eligibility. I think it'll be Keenan
Peely. Are you sure?
Here's what's going to be interesting is I don't know that offensively it's going to be much. It's going to be a very big deal for Tennessee at all. I said that back in December. I think that Tennessee experimented with it in the spring. I think they'll have it, but I still think it's going to be I call them the Wiggles. Y'all can call them whatever you want to. The three-shirted guys, the tight shirt guys and the black drapes behind them signaling in signals. I don't think that's going to change for Tennessee.
All right, we'll go to Valde Long. Who were the power forwards and centers on Tennessee basketball's transfer portal radar? Anyone else possibly in the discussion with Awaka as well? Kind of where are they at with Awaka and where are they at with power forwards and centers?
Decision process for Tobey Awaka is still ongoing as far as I know. I don't know. AP's got a bold prediction about next football season, so we'll see where that goes.
He's having fun.
Igor Milicic is a 6'10", 225 guy from Charlotte. He's got Tennessee in his final three. He was on campus Tuesday for his official visit. He's kind of a stretch forward a little bit because he can step out and shoot it, but he's got more size than Cade Tyson at Belmont. It's another stretch four, who's more, I guess, wing-oriented than a traditional power forward. Center-wise, I don't know that they've had a ton of actual, true five centers out of the portal, kind of on their list. There's a kid out of Rutgers, but he had a top 12 that didn't have Tennessee. And I think there might've been some interest there, but it didn't seem to go very far. But I think your top priority right now is to get Tobey back out of the portal and back on your team. And then with Igor Milicic and Cade Tyson, see what happens there with those two and kind of go from there after that.
Grant, is there a point of no return with Tobey? I mean, because the portal window closes at some point, right? Now, I know kids can still commit to a school up until school starts in August if you want to lay it around in the portal. The window is to go into the portal. I get that. But most of these kids are going to make a decision before the start of summer school, in most cases in the early part of May at the latest. Is there a point of – a threshold point there, or is this one that you think Rick and staff are just going to will be willing to wait him out for a considerable amount of time here?
I don't think they'll be super patient with it. I think they're going to want a decision. I mean, if you go back a year ago, Josiah Jordan James, I mean, and what Tobey has working in his favor is they've got five open scholarship spots. So they got a lot of work to do and they want Tobey to be part of that, but they're not going to wait around forever. If you go back to Josiah last year, he was going through the NBA draft process. It looked like he was gone for a month or more. And there's at one point where they took Chris Ludlam, and I'm pretty sure Josiah Jordan James looked at it like, well, there goes my roster spot. Like, they're not going to sit around and wait on these guys forever to make these decisions because they got to get ready for next season. They got to have a roster that's going to be competitive and compete at a high level. So they want Tobey back, but I don't think they're going to wait forever. But at the same time, they got so much work to do that it works in Tobey's favor that he's got a lot more leverage maybe than Josiah had a year ago.
We got plenty more questions to get into, but first let's get a word from our proud sponsors, and that is Exterior Home Solutions.
Severe weather can strike at any time in East Tennessee, and Mother Nature can do severe damage to the first and most important line of defense that you and your family have against Mother Nature, and that is your roof. Whenever she strikes, make sure that you call the people that I call. Make sure you trust the people that I trust, and that's my friends at Exterior Home Solutions, because they're more than friends, they're truly family.
That phone number is 865-524-5888, and you can visit Exterior Home Solutions online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. All right, we'll jump back into the questions. Athron says, with all the fanfare around Nico and George, how Tennessee would it be if Merklinger is the most productive quarterback of the three? AP.
I don't think you can discount anything, but I mean, like, Nico's going to get the next 2 years in theory, and then we'll kind of see where it goes. Again, 1 year at a time. I mean, like, look at the state of college football. I mean, Tyler Barron, he's went to the portal 14 times. I mean, seriously. I mean, in the last 5 months, it's like he's taking a college tour and he's 17 years old getting ready to take the ACC. I just don't think you can project out past this fall.
That's not a knock. I mean, Jake Merklinger had a good spring. I thought he did some nice things. I thought it looked pretty good in the spring game. But, I mean, AP's right. I mean, you don't have any idea what – I mean, think about that. This guy's talking about Merklinger being the best guy. And five questions earlier, the guy was talking about how we were, throwing cold water on Nico for being a generational quarterback. So,
hey, he had a 26-yard touchdown run in the orange and white game.
Yeah.
Don't discount him. Gaston Moore, don't discount him either based on those orange and white stats.
Yeah. It's all about opportunity. What do you do with your opportunity when it's given to you? A couple more here. Next question. Who is the next position to jump in the boat, Austin?
As far as recruiting?
Yeah. No, to our next Vol Quest staff member.
Well.
Lady Vols coverage, right?
We haven't told you you're out.
no shocker there.
Matt's going to do everybody's job and still do the other thing he does. I'll go DB.
Right, so we'll go DB. Speaking of Lady Vols basketball, opinions on Coach Caldwell's initial staff, Brent Hubbs, your name, Brent. Yeah.
Well, I think she did the smart thing, and it's what a lot of coaches don't do when they get their first big job. A lot of coaches, when they get that first big job, hire all their friends. Or they bring their full staff from their smaller school stop with them. We see this in the NFL too, right? You get a coordinator, he gets a job and he hires all of his buddies, and that's just not the case here. I think she brought two people with her for continuity, to know style of play and understand what she's looking for day in and day out. And then she's bringing in two that have SEC experience, both in recruiting, scouting, and understanding this league, which I think is a smart move on her part. I mean, I think that's a really good move, because, Grant, there's a learning curve, and there's no way to avoid it. There's a learning curve in this league and learning curve in recruiting, but you also don't want to be, teaching your entire staff your system and how you want to do things. So I think it's a pretty nice balance. Proof will be in the pudding, but it feels like a decent balance.
Yeah, mix was the first thing that came to my mind, a good mix. I think, if I'm not mistaken, weren't a couple of those SEC former associate head coaches, if I'm not mistaken, yes. Which is a big deal, because you don't only have experience in this league, you got quite a bit of experience. Like, if you're an associate head coach, you've kind of climbed the ladder a little bit, and you've kind of, paid your dues, and you've been around for a minute. So I think the mix that Hubs is talking about is kind of where my mind went to first, because you have the people around you, like Hub said, that can help you kind of implement what you want to do. And that's a big deal, because she's won everywhere she's been. But you also need somebody around you that knows the league. And to have a couple former associate head coaches, I think, is a big deal.
Let's go to Heisman Oku. Do you see a year-over-year increase in in-state talents, Austin?
Yeah, I mean, the state is better than it was 20 years ago. It's better than it was 15. It was better than it was 10. It's better than it was 5 overall. Now, again, there are more special years than others, right? I mean, you know, you look back and 2017 was a fantastic year in state, you know, and one of the best ones.
What was that year Pruitt brought like 9 guys from in-state?
That was 2020.
Yep.
That was the Eason, Jabari Small, yep. Big O. It was basically all three kids from Whitehaven, two kids from Briarcrest, and then I think it was Cooper, Tyler Barron, and maybe one more. It kind of runs and flows. The individual talent, has improved. I think, and around Knoxville, the individual talents kind of went down a little bit the last couple of years. I'm sure they'll see a kind of a boom back the other direction. Overall, the state is still far better than it was several years ago.
We'll go to Yuri, the golden one. During the spring game, the announcer said that Josh Heupel wasn't calling in plays. Is that something he wants to do for the upcoming season, allow the offensive coordinator to call the majority of the plays? As always, Brent, I think this is it's kind of both of them, but I would say more or less it was giving him the opportunity to get some reps, just like his players in the spring game. I'm pretty sure Josh Heupel will call a whole lot of plays this fall, right?
I don't think he's ever called a play in a spring game.
Yeah.
I think he always lets his coordinator call a play and just stays out of the way because he's observing. He wants to see an operation, not get involved in the operation, see how everything flows. I mean, for a head coach in that game, it's so much more about taking notes about things you need to work on and things you're looking at. And it's not just your players, Grant. It's procedure, there's a laundry list of stuff that you think can come up during a game and you want to make sure you have all that buttoned up. And I think for head coaches, it's more about observing in spring games than it is participating in spring games.
And no disrespect to ESPN or ESPN Plus or SEC Network Plus or whatever it was, but I don't think there's a ton of production, research. I don't think there's a ton of – I think these guys just drop in and call it basically what amounts to a practice, and I don't know how much info they're given beforehand. I mean, this is not like a regular season game where they're sitting down with coaches and getting a ton of information. So, and based on – I never went back and watched the pregame sideline guy interview Heupel, but based on what people were talking about, it didn't go so well, and it felt like a very ill-informed interview process to begin with. So I don't know how much those guys even know to begin with about this team and about the situation, especially in April when you're trying to figure it out.
I know is – The radio sideline guy was better.
Well, that's what I was gonna say. The guy that did the radio interview with the head coach.
I have as many reps doing that as Jalen McCullough had in his career at Tennessee.
The best part of Saturday was everybody that kept coming up to me going, "Why has Hubs got on a pullover? It's hot out here."
Fleece for days, AP. Fleece for days.
Hubs, can you give me some pointers? Guy. Because I'm sure Mark Packer's going to put me back down on the sideline because AP's going to tell him to. So you give me some pointers on doing sideline again.
Dress warm, number one, even if it's August.
Fleece for days. that game's different. I mean, that's a different game. It's a fun game for me to do because you get to hang out down there and talk to a bunch of former players and a bunch of guys. And it's okay if you miss a play while you're interviewing somebody. Whereas when you get into a real game, it's like you can't miss something because you're talking to somebody random on the sideline. So it's a total different vibe. You get a lot of freedom when you get down there. So it was like, hey, let's talk to everybody today. And that's I enjoy it. It's fun.
Let's not forget you're in the booth because I push for you to be in the booth on Rivalry Thursday.
Oh,
and I'm thankful. I'm thankful, man. Hey, push for me to stay up there. Let's hope Casey comes back.
He is. He'll be back.
Let's go to, Pillsbury_Vol. How many wide receivers do we take this cycle, including Dotson? Who are the highest ranked, most realistic targets to fill those remaining spots?
Oh, man, I could do this for days. I think they're going to take 4. Now, they have to take at least 3, but they're in on so many guys. I think it ends up being 4. You're looking, right now, I think, Radarius, I know I said this on the Tuesday podcast. I corrected on the board for those that aren't a member of VolQuest. Which is why you got to be a member of VolQuest because
there you go.
You get up in real time and not wait till the next podcast.
There you go.
Radarius Jackson, I thought earlier in the week was more in his infancy. I think he's much closer to doing something. And so, let's go Radarius Jackson. So, we got Dotson, Radarius Jackson, Thomas Blackshear, Travis Smith, Marcus Harris, Caleb Cunningham, Cam Sparks,
French,
and Jamie French. And, you know, so, I mean, you've got a bunch of guys. And they would take, you know, probably any of those guys if they wanted to get in the boat. Tennessee's in a pretty good spot there. I think you're looking at, you know, probably having a couple of guys when the calendar turns to May. And then, you know, it'll all be about official visits in June. Tennessee, you know, wants to be a heavy player for Jamie French. I think they are. Ohio State is the team thought to be the team to beat there. We'll kind of see, though. George has been working that one really, really hard. Travis Smith's another one that's uber talented. Derek Meadows, I forgot him. There's another one that was just in this past weekend. I think Tennessee going into last weekend was kind of fringe in it, and I think they're firmly in it now after the visit this past weekend for the orange and white game for the big kid from Bishop Gorman out in Las Vegas. So, you know, Tennessee's in on a lot of receivers. I will really give credit to Glenn Ellerby and Kelsey Pope. Those two rooms, I thought, didn't recruit enough bodies the last few years, and they are in on a ton of guys and have a legitimate shot at some really, really good players in this class, at both offensive tackle and wide receiver.
Let's go to Golf Nut 1941. Said, I've wondered if the baseball team has a machine to pitch to players in batting practice, and if you know if it's capable of throwing curves and sliders. Maybe it's a stupid question, but I've seen at times players are just baffled by breaking balls, especially sliders. Yeah, to answer your question, they do have a pitching machine that throws breaking balls and, you know, has a different, you know, pitch mix and all that, and it's been there for years. So yeah, they get some work in there. At the end of the day, a lot of times good pitching. And I know a lot of times it's not great pitching that you're referring to, but a lot of times good pitching just makes hitting look dumb. And that's the sport of baseball. But they do have a machine that throws breaking balls, and they take it in BP. Let's go to I Miss Denarius Moore. The spring has hammered home the importance of position coach and player pairings for development. T-Lander and Inge, Eason and Jenkins with Gardner, etc. What are some of the best pairings of a coach and player you've seen at UT, Brent?
Robert Meacham, Trooper Taylor jumps out to me. You know, Meacham had really not done a whole lot in his career. Trooper Taylor goes from the running backs coach to the receivers coach and made all that group better. Jason Swain was included in that. But, I mean, Meacham went to a 1,000-yard receiver. Now, David Cutcliffe was a part of that. He fixed Eric Ainge. I mean, all that was included. But I think Trooper Taylor getting Robert Meacham's focus dialed in as a position coach and holding them to a standard was a big deal for Robert Meacham and gave him an NFL career instead of being a guy Austin would have been talking about as a five-star who didn't do a whole lot in his Tennessee career, as he was mentioned some of those guys, rightfully so, earlier. So that's the first one. I read that question. That was the first one that jumped out to me. I think Dan Brooks and Shane Burton would be another one. I'm going in the Wayback Machine here for that one. But Shane Burton was a tight end who got flipped to defensive end, and Shane was not very mature. I think Dan Brooks helped Shane Burton along. Shane Burton went on to play, 8 years or something like that in the NFL. So I think that was a pretty good marriage there to maximize those guys. That's a couple of guys that just jump off, you know, immediately for me, but that's going way back in time.
What about Crompton Kiffin?
Yeah, certainly.
Would that be the right person to credit for his success?
Yeah, for sure.
Success?
Yeah. And again, I think that was probably a misguided deal by all of us, because when Jim Chaney came in, you know, came back in a second time, it was all, he's going to fix the quarterback. He's going to fix the quarterback because look what he did with Crompton. But I think Kiffin was the one who fixed Crompton. And Crompton will tell you that he fixed him. You can throw Nick Reveyes and Monty Kiffin in there as well. That system fit Nick Reveyes perfectly. Not sure Nick Reveyes would have been on the field if Monty Kiffin hadn't been the defensive coordinator here. That's two good ones. And in that era, Crompton obviously was a bust, right? I mean, he was in no man's land. And obviously, from that Georgia game on, was terrific for Tennessee.
Another one here from I Miss Denarius Moore, saying, on the NIL side, Austin, if I misquote you here, I apologize, but you mentioned something about, I like this one, positional values for NIL deals in college football. Quarterbacks get larger deals than offensive guards, etc. Bearing that in mind, does this neatly translate to positional value of the NFL, or are there certain positions, running back for example, that are valued at a higher degree in college than in the NFL? I think there's probably a little some things that are different case by case. team by team AP, but for the most part, I mean, the blueprint's kind of there what it is. Quarterback's going to get paid, pass rusher's going to get paid, and then like you're not going to pay as much for a guard or maybe even a middle linebacker than you would for like a wide receiver or somebody.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, I think that's how Tennessee's kind of looking at it. You know, it's more like the NFL model. And let's face it, I mean, the running back has been devalued in the NFL a little bit. So from a money standpoint, it's not like, you know, the starting running back at Tennessee makes jump change, but I don't think Tennessee's overpaying, excuse me, for that position either. So I think, you know, each position is different. And in each school, like some schools value the running back and they're willing to pay a kid, you know, near seven figures for a running back. Some aren't because, you know, they'd rather spend it, you know, on offensive tackles and pass rushers. So, again, each school is different. Each coach has to make that decision slash collective.
Well, and here's the other thing too, Grant. I mean, you have an unknown salary cap in the college ranks because it's not Monopoly money. You do have a salary cap in the NFL ranks. And in the NFL ranks, you're not doing a ton of one-year deals, right? So your need that pops up in the NFL, you probably know that need is coming, right? For example, the Titans take the Spears kid from Tulane as a tailback in part because they know Derrick Henry's final run is coming. They're going to make a change there where that contract is. It's a little bit different in the college deal. Guy up and leaves you in December or January that you were banking on, suddenly you might overpay to fill that guy's spot because you have to have something there. The NFL is a little more planned out because of, you know, the fact that you're under a contract for multi-years.
And the fact that you're drafting. Like, an NFL franchise has X number of picks in seven rounds of the NFL draft, and you have free agency, and you got whatever your roster looks like now. You can try to find a running back in the fourth, fifth round that you think can give you first, second round value at a cheaper rate. I mean, with college guys, you're obviously recruiting them. You're not drafting, you're not picking them. You're trying to meet their demands as well, and they have a little bit more leverage in terms of, well, if I don't like this offer, I can go, you know, wherever and try to get X amount of dollars. So I think that's a big time difference too, in terms of, yeah, they're going to value different positions at different, you know, money wise than the NFL, but at the same time, you're not exactly just picking who you want and I'm drafting you right here and you're signing with my team, whether you like it or not, because that's where we picked you. So I think there's a little bit difference in the leverage wise and who has a little bit more leverage in terms of player versus teams.
Going back real quick to the pitching machines that can throw breaking ball question for a little while ago, it's called a spin ball machine. And it can even match spin rates and everything, which is, quote, pretty wild. So there you go. Got a couple more here. Let's roll through them. MT Vols wants to know who's expected to be the field goal kicker and PAT kicker this year, Brent. Is that going to be Tuberville?
Yeah, I think it's going to be Josh Tuberville when it's all said and done. I think it's more of the question is going to be who's going to be the kickoff guy. Can Tuberville handle both? Or are they going to try to be careful there with, you know, wear and tear on the leg? Where are they with the kickoff deal? I feel like it's Josh Tuberville to be the field goal guy. He was a little bit banged up at times this spring. I think they're pretty cautious with his leg. I don't think they're overly worried about it, but I think he's done it in games before. I think that's where they go as a kickoff guy right now. I mean, as a field goal guy right now, excuse me.
Yeah, and if he can still kick off, if he can handle that, I mean, he's freaking weapon, man. He can boot those things through the end zone. He did a really good job last year.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, he was a weapon.
How would you rank our defensive tackles in terms, this is from JVols95, in terms of NFL potential and the ceilings of players there? Not going to hold any of you guys accountable for this, just curious where you're at. Evaluating these guys in terms of NFL talent, Thomas, Omar, Norman Lott, Eason, Simmons, Hobbs, Moy. Just off the top of your head, kind of order those guys in terms of who you think best projects to the NFL from first to worst.
Right now, I would put Omar Norman Lott at the top with Bryson Eason second. But I think that could flip-flop. I mean, Bryson Eason had a fantastic spring. I mean, it feels like he has totally turned the corner. If you go back last summer, Jalen Wright was getting similar buzz for having turned the corner. I think Bryson Eason on the defensive side at his position, and those two different things, has a chance to be that guy that really turns the corner this fall. So in theory, he could get past Omar Norman Lott. But if you said right now, I'd go Omar Norman Lott then Bryce and Easton. And then after that, you know, it's kind of six one, half dozen the other, in my opinion. I mean, I think Hobbs has the most upside, but again,
he's a pup.
Backup as a freshman last year. I got to see more to project him any higher.
Volunteered 87 says, likely the third straight year the winner of the College World Series doesn't make it to the postseason the following season. What gives, Kaner? Couldn't tell you. Yeah, LSU's.
Sports gives.
Yeah, LSU, Mississippi State, and of course Ole Miss sandwich in between them. They lost a lot of good players, obviously, but I don't know, man. I honestly couldn't tell you. Does the feel of the locker room ever drastically change from one season to the next with the same head coach? Or does Coach Josh Heupel's locker room always have a similar feel, and Coach Tony Vitello's locker room always have a similar feel? Brent, how I would answer that would be, the locker room takes on the persona of the players. If you have good leadership, then it's probably a similar locker room every single year. If you have crap heads in there, then it's probably not a good locker room. But it takes on the persona of your veterans, and those veterans watch the veterans when they're underclassmen. And so it can be a similar culture and a similar locker room, sure, but it's still kind of different based on the personalities that you have in there. Would you want to add anything to that?
Well, I would say this, Grant. I mean, coaches will tell you, I really enjoyed coaching that team, but that team 2 years earlier or 2 years later wasn't my favorite team to coach, for exactly what Eric is saying. I mean, everything can be in place, but it doesn't take much to mess things up in a locker room in a hurry. And I think it's harder now, more now than ever, because of the NIL factor.
Yeah, and I think you're just relying on your culture as much as anything. I think that's the biggest part of it, the biggest piece of it, because you're recruiting to fit a culture. You're recruiting guys based on what you think will fit in your locker room. I mean, obviously talent is first and foremost, but you also want to bring in somebody that you think is going to help your football team off the field just as much as they help them on the field. So I think culture is the biggest thing you fall back on. I mean, Heupel's a player's coach, and I think we've seen that in his time here at Tennessee so far. I think Rick Barnes is tough to play for, but they have a pretty good culture, and they recruit guys that they think are going to fit into that culture and fit the basketball program. I don't know about Tony, how he would factor into that equation, but I think it's just culture more than anything that you fall back on, and you hope it doesn't change from year to year that much.
And I think baseball's different. Baseball guys are different. I mean, there's some immaturity there from time to time, guys being silly. But I think in baseball, it's okay to be a little sillier, you know, because you play around. And I think in a lot of ways, baseball guys are a little closer to being pros when they come out of high school because, you know, some of them have been drafted to begin with. They've played a gazillion games for their entire life. I think baseball players are a little different in their adjustment there. And feels like Tony lets them be dudes, right? Just kind of lets them, hey, if you do your work, you go be a dude. I'm good with that.
Yeah, I mean, he'll talk to us in postgame all the time. He'll be like, man, I didn't know it was going to go this well today, because in pregame they were really, really loose, almost too loose. But they turned it on when the game came on. Or he'll be like, man, they were super serious out there, almost to a fault, to where I wanted to go out there and be like, hey, smile a little bit. He lets them be them. And I'll end on this. With this question, if you want to see the health of a clubhouse, at least for baseball, last weekend, Ethan Payne came in and laid down a sack bunt, the only sack bunt of the season for Tennessee, mind you. The dugout goes wild. Charlie Taylor hits a three-run bomb on Tuesday against Bellarmine. I mean, they almost got a celebration penalty, if you will, because they were out there past first base celebrating. Those veterans who have been here for a decade, you know, doing things that contribute in ways, and the whole team's going nuts. That just goes to show you how healthy your clubhouse and your dugout is. I will go next to Jason Vols 22. By the end of June, over or under three more commits in football. That's got to be over, right, AP?
Yeah, better be.
Boo Carter starting 3/4 of the games next year. I would say under right now, Brent, but he'll still play a lot, right?
Yeah, I don't know where I'm at with that one. 12 games.
I mean, you're talking about almost the entire season him starting.
Yeah, well, okay, we'll see. I mean, how does Jordan Thomas play the first 3 weeks of the season? You know, where's Boo Carter at? I don't think that one's as much of a given as you would think. So we'll see.
If Boo comes on, Brent, could they slide Jordan Thomas if he's healthy back to safety if needed?
Yeah, they could.
Okay,
I mean, that could be a possibility there.
And could this be the best wide receiver athletically we've had in 20 years? White, Brazel, McCoy, Staley, Matthews, Nimrod, Thornton. This all has every opportunity to become a very powerful wide receiver group if it all comes together. Health, offensive line, quarterback, balance, and offense. This group of wide receivers collectively is as good as the last group from when, guys, here at Tennessee.
Well,
it's a deeper unit.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I mean, it's a deeper unit of athletes.
Yeah, you go back 20 years and you've got three pretty good ones in 04 in Meacham, Swain, and Brett Smith, who became good players that year. They were highly productive, but you didn't go 60. You know, you didn't go. I think Chris Hannon was a backup then, who was just a really young player. I mean, they weren't very deep in 04. I don't know. I mean, the question is, I mean, are we going to see the depth? Are they going to play five, six, seven guys at receiver? Yeah. Or are you going to play three or four? And you don't really see all the depth that's out there, you know? And, I think Chaz Nimrod and Caleb Webb did some good things. I'm not sure I'm ready to categorize them in a grouping of, you know, some of the all time great position group wide receivers yet. I mean, I still think they have plenty to prove, you know, out there at this point. But I mean, it's a solid group in a system that showcases the wide receivers, Grant. I mean, you can go back to some other years where you played three in 04 because you also ran the ball out of the I formation a good bit. I mean, this is a system that showcases the receivers in different ways.
Yeah, and I can't remember the context of Heupel saying this after the Orange and White game, but he said it's the deepest wide receiver group he's had. Was he talking about Tennessee or as a coach?
I would think Tennessee. I mean,
yeah.
I would have to go back and see that. I mean, that the Missouri wide receiver groups and
right. with Drew Lock.
Yeah,
but him saying that, I think, tells you what you need to know, because obviously he's no dummy on the offensive side of the ball. He knows how to get talent at wide receiver and take advantage and execute with that talent. So for him to say that, I think kind of gives you the context you need for this group and how good they could be and how deep it is.
Yeah, it probably answers your question.
Cubs, in what year did Chris Hannon score three touchdowns, and who did he score them against?
Grant Ramey with the win.
I don't have the year. Was it a Mississippi State home game?
That's correct.
In November?
That's correct.
It was like a 59-point game or something.
That's
like
right.
That. Don't ask me why I remember that game.
59-21, 2003, from Casey.
That's back when they weren't scoring 59 points every 3 weeks.
From the great Casey Clawson, everybody.
Grant Ramey, historian, ladies and gentlemen.
Two more. Caden_Measles wants to know, what position does the staff target in the portal now that spring practice is over? We've talked ad nauseum potentially about a running back. AP, what are some other positions potentially that you could see Tennessee maybe evaluating?
I think it depends if they lose anybody.
Yeah.
You know, like if they lost a safety, I think they'd try to go bring in a safety. Do I think they'll go after a left guard?
Kind of feels one for one, right, AP?
Yep. We'll see who they lose. They've lost to this point, Elijah Herring.
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe. That's right. So
again, but you are past the point of just taking somebody to take somebody, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. We're going to end on this one. Pine, this is a good one, and shout out to Black Diamond Vol for adding to it as well. With Dalton Connect's UT career over, who is UT's best transfer? Dalton Connect, Hendon Hooker, and Black Diamond Vol threw in Chase Dolander as well.
For me, it's easy. As much as I love Dalton Connect, football had been longing for a season like 2022 for so long. It's Hendon Hooker, period. Again, I love Dalton Connect. And you know, his impact is unbelievable. But Tennessee football had been stuck in the wilderness for 40 years. And 2022 took him out of the wilderness.
Yeah, if you were kind of ranking these, in my opinion, for reasons you just mentioned, it'd be one would be Hendon, two would be Dalton, three would be Chase, who was fantastic. Chase would be three because Tennessee went to the World Series the year before he got here, and his last year here, he wasn't as dominant as his first year. Still a top 10 overall pick, but that's kind of how I would order those.
All right, here's my question to you, Grant Ramey. When you look at one and two, I think we all agree Dolander would be third. Is Hendon Hooker number one because he's Hendon Hooker, or is it because Hendon Hooker joined in matrimony on the college football field with Josh Heupel, whereas Dalton Kinnick comes in and plays for a veteran coach in Rick Barnes, who has established himself and has had success here, and he single-handedly won you a half dozen basketball games. Does that change the perspective of it at all? Because when Hendon Hooker came in, zero fanfare because he came in to play for Jeremy Pruitt and Jim Chaney. So how much of the Hendon Hooker is the Josh Heupel effect? Now, some would argue you had Joe Milton here and that didn't work in year two, so that makes Hendon Hooker more valuable. I ask these questions to you, Grant Ramey.
I mean, it was a perfect marriage. It was lightning in a bottle. It was everything you needed to be. It was magic in 2022. And I give the nod to Hendon as well, because football's football, and there's a reason it has a 100,000-seat stadium and basketball has a 20,000-seat arena. I mean, because that's what football is in this part of the country, what it means to this fan base. They needed that win over Alabama. I mean, that was just such a huge night at Neyland Stadium, a huge moment for the Tennessee football program. They needed that win at LSU the way they won it. They needed that, you know, what was an 8-0 start. The only thing that hurts with Hendon is how it ended and the injury, and that's not fair to him. And obviously that night at South Carolina was a disaster and all that stuff. But the fact that you could make an argument out of this, I think, speaks to Dalton Kinnick and how special he was to get Tennessee back to the Elite Eight for only the second time in program history, for him to score it the way he did consistently. And Hubs is right. I mean, he's playing for a defensive-minded head coach who, you know, he had to kind of drag that offense out of the mud that's been in for, you know, most of the Rick Barnes era, because that's just what they do. They play defense first and offense second, and Dalton was that special. But I think it's kind of splitting hairs, but football's football. That's your quarterback. The way that season went, so much fun. And it part of it is because it's a perfect marriage with Josh Heupel. But it was fun to watch, and it happened, and it's hard to argue against it.
We'll end on that one. Couldn't put it better myself there, Grant Ramey. And we thank everybody for sending in some questions. A lot of questions from different people who don't normally send in questions. So we thank you. Couldn't even get to half of them. We had so many this week. But as always, we appreciate you guys for joining us here on the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast. Big thank you to our friends Exterior Home Solutions for being the presenting sponsor. You can give them a call today for a free estimate. That's at 865-524-5888. And online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. They're local and trusted since 1999. That is Exterior Home Solutions. For Grant Ramey, Brent Hubbs, Austin Price, I am Eric Kane. Thank you guys so much. If you're listening to us or watching us on YouTube, there's a promo code on the screen right now if you want to join and become a member of the Journalist Quarters over at VolQuest.com, so you don't miss a thing. Put in that promo code right now, and you're going to get a special deal over at VolQuest.com. And so much going on right now, Brent Hubbs. It's a perfect time to link up with us.
No doubt. And plenty of portal coverage. That'll continue. Baseball coverage, obviously. Plenty of things coming out of spring practice as well. Getting ready for what will be a crazy month of, obviously, in June in recruiting. But there'll be a lot to happen between now and then. So you want to stay locked in. As Austin said earlier, don't wait to get your news 3 or 4 days late on the podcast. Get in real time on the General's Quarters.
He's Brent Hubbs. Again, I'm Eric Kane, Grant Ramey, all surprised. This has been the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast here on YouTube and the Journal's Quarters.
You've been listening to the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast every week right here on VolQuest.